fear is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach. So you get what we had here last week, which is the way you want. Well, it's it.
Clinton. George Clinton, 1805 to 1809. Thomas Jefferson was a very, very interesting founding father. A lot of facts there. I mean, a lot of this you can Google some of it, but some stuff there you can find that you can't really get unless you really search it out. But what was Jefferson's last words? They say his last recorded words are "No doctor, nothing more." But these are perhaps too memorable. These words right up here. Is it the 4th? That's what he wanted to know. I guess he wanted to know if it was his birthday. He wanted to know, is this the 4th? And he died on the 4th, so he died on the 4th. I guess he was waiting to die. He was on his deathbed, I guess. So he died on his deathbed. And, sleeping in his room, I guess, or the White House, wherever the heck he was. Where did he die at? And he wasn't in the White House, 1820. So where did he die at? Let me see if I can get that information up here. How did he die, actually? I don't have that information. Like I'm still putting this together, everything about Thomas Jefferson and, wait a second here. I think I do have that, actually. Let's see. Thomas Jefferson and James Monroe died. Oh, actually, James Monroe, he died on July 4th, too. So that's interesting. That's a heck of a day for a president or a former president to die on, huh? I mean, it's obviously they were, these were good presidents, presidents, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington. George Washington was obviously one of a kind. But, of course, you're not taught that today in the schools. System, and we're going to get into a little bit of this, how messed up the system really is. I got some audios here to play, a little bit of stuff here. This one's going to be a good one here because it'll pertain to the times which we live today, and maybe you could use the information the best way you can. Phone number 657-383-0616. Gold's Gym here in Greensboro. There's this guy here. He's a clown, this general manager over here. I'm going to get into that story probably later or on the next show. This guy's a clown. I mean, he's something else. But because everyone knows I work out at Gold's Gym, the people that listen to this show or been around here for a while that been listening. And I don't know if I'm going to go into the story right now. I want to put something together on that because the guy's a jerk, real jerk. That's what he is. But let me get this audio up here going here. I was going to play this one here for you. Hopefully the sound quality will be better than what it has been in the past. It's not too long. About 7 minutes, and you'll learn something. Fraud. IRS fraud.
Can we go into the IRS?
Yeah, sure.
Let's talk about that. That's huge.
Well, the IRS is just part of the Federal Reserve System problem. And in actuality, there is no law. I've researched this very thoroughly, because I kept hearing for years there's no law that you have to pay, and I saw and they make you think anybody that says that's a wacko and a kook, but there is no law. Let me just tell you straight out. There is no law that requires you to file a 1040. I researched this, and I'll tell you why there's no law. First of all, the Constitution says, that there's two kinds of taxation, direct taxes and indirect taxes. A direct tax must be apportioned and done by census, which means that a direct tax, which is what a tax on your labor would be, a direct tax, you can't get away from it, right? A direct tax on your labor would have to be apportioned, meaning divided amongst all the people equally, right?
Mm-hmm.
And an indirect tax is like an excise tax. It's like a tax that you don't have to pay if you don't use the service.
Luxury car.
Well, not even a luxury car, but like gasoline. If you don't want to drive a car, if you want to take a bicycle, you don't buy gas, you don't pay the tax.
No.
So that's called an indirect tax. But that indirect tax has to be the same in every state.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be uniform. Okay? So there's two kinds of taxes, direct and indirect, in the Constitution. In 1894, they tried to pass an income tax on your labor. The Supreme Court said you can't do that. It's unconstitutional. They stopped. In 1913, to get around that Pollock decision of 1894, they passed the 16th Amendment, which said we can tax any income from any place forever, okay? And once they passed that tax, then people started paying an income tax on the land. It became a third form of taxation.
Mm-hmm.
You had direct apportioned tax, you had the indirect tax, and now you had a direct tax that was unapportioned,
mm-hmm.
okay? So you had three forms of taxation now. But, two things. The amendment was never ratified properly. It was a fraud. Okay? And that's been proven. But the second point is this. Even if it wasn't a fraud and had been ratified properly, even if it had been, okay, the Supreme Court in 8 different decisions that I have researched said the 16th Amendment gave the government no new power of taxation. They can't tax the labor of the American people, so it was finished. And in 1917, they stopped taxing, so they did it for 3 years, right? And so there's no tax on the labor of the American people, no legal tax, and no constitutional tax. So they've made the IRS code, right, says whatever it says, but whatever it says is irrelevant, because it's not in compliance with the Supreme Court decision, right? So even the IRS code, if you actually examine it, okay, even though it's irrelevant, it doesn't comply with the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, if you examine it, then there's still no law that makes you pay a tax on your labor.
Okay. Yet every one of the most, well, I guess there are, what, 69, 70 million Americans who don't, but most of the rest of us are on a treadmill, and we're paying dutifully our taxes on time each year.
Well, they make you feel if you don't pay, you're not a good citizen. That's part of their propaganda. And that's what allows them to keep spending money.
But, in fact, it's not just you saying this. What I found very compelling in your film is that you're talking with former IRS agents and investigators that were put to the task of finding out on behalf of inquiries as to whether or not this was a legal practice.
Right.
Only to find out that it wasn't legal. And, in fact, some of these people who were formerly with the IRS have not paid their taxes since they found out about this.
Right. There are many IRS agents, former agents, who've left the IRS because they did the research, and they were in there before I was.
Right.
You know, and they deserve to be honored for the work they've done because it's a giant, in my opinion, it's a giant scam. And
it takes a lot of courage to do that, though, because what are we still up against?
Well, the thing is that they're up against the police state because what they'll do is, even though there's no law, they threaten people with harm. But I interviewed the IRS commissioner, the ex-IRS commissioner, who wrote the tax code. He was general counsel to the IRS. He was the commissioner to the IRS, and he wrote the tax code. Okay, his name is Sheldon Cohen, and I interviewed him for the movie. And in the movie, he says, Supreme Court decisions are inapplicable to the IRS.
Interesting. And what way did he get an investigation?
Because I put him into a corner. He couldn't answer the questions. So he was forced, at the end, to say, Supreme Court decisions don't matter, which we all know is a lie.
Yeah.
So the IRS is not beyond the Supreme Court, right? So there is no law that allows the government to have a direct, unapportioned tax on your labor. Okay? Now, an income tax is defined by the Supreme Court as a corporate gain.
Mm-hmm.
You see, there is an income tax, but it's not a tax on your labor. An income tax is actually a tax on gains by corporations.
Mm-hmm.
That's the definition of an income tax in the Eisner versus McCumber case, if anybody wants to go look it up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so, there's an income tax, but it's not a tax on you. It's a tax on corporations.
Right. And this has been pressed. This was pressed with many administrations, including the Clinton administration as well as now, and so it may have kind of crossed political boundaries. And can you talk a little bit about the background? You have a bite in there, a soundbite in there from Judge Emmett Sullivan.
Yes.
Can you tell about how that came about? It was really just a shocking statement.
Well, what happened was that there's this group called We the People, and they served a petition on the government for the government to show the war. They're enforcing. We have a right to petition. Under the First Amendment, people have a right to petition their government to get answers to things. The government is the servant of the people, not the other way around. And they petition the government to get answers. And the government refused to answer the question about where the law is. So they went to court. And as Judge Sullivan said in his decision, that the government does not have to answer the people's questions about where the law is.
And that is beyond chilling.
Yes. We don't have a constitution anymore. We don't have a government run by the people anymore. We live in a totalitarian country today. That's the bottom line. We live in totalitarianism. And if you want to get it back, We have to get rid of the Federal Reserve System.
All right there. How you like that one, huh? Well, yeah. Well, yeah, God rest his soul, Aaron Russo there, you know, is pretty smart. Knows this thing, you know. I mean, it's a fact, but why is everyone walking around like zombies? You know, what's the deal here? Because really nobody cares. You have a few out there that really care about the issue, that are going to pay attention. I mean, other than that, everybody wants to fight with each other, you know, point fingers at each other. That's what we want. That's what we're taught, really. Or some of us are too sick, or we're too old, or we're too young and dumb, or, you know, what have you. They've got this all figured out. You walk into the grocery store, on sale, $4.99. This price over here is $3.99 for something with a lesser count. They got everything figured out. The 2-ply, 4-ply, 6-ply, they got all the price. You're not going to get a deal. Everything is designed to take your Federal Reserve notes, your debt-based notes, to keep you having to work for more. More, 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 so they could take more, 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 more from you. And that's what it's all about. Unless you stand your ground, stand up and say, I've had enough. And nobody's going to do that, because we believe that Biden's going to save us, or Trump's going to come down from the mountains and rescue us. And that's not going to happen either. Our America plan, I told you what was going on years ago. That was the last best-ditch effort that we, as a people in America, put together that was lawful, was peaceful, and had the law on our side. And today, you try talking to people about it, they'll argue with you still. And I didn't hear nothing about it, so it must not be true. You know? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what else to tell everybody. Well, I will not comply. You know, that's what most people are going to say. That's what you have to do. But there is lawful remedies. I got one more here for you, and then I'll check the phone boards.
Let me give you a little commentary on the Holocaust. The Holocaust is generally deemed to be the worst travesty in human history. 5 or 6 million Jews. I don't know what the actual count was, but it was a lot of people. They did a genocide. They tried to wipe out an entire race. Hitler did not take Germany by force. He did not drive in with army tanks. Hitler was elected. Anybody have any idea what the vote count was? What his percentage of the total was? 98% in Austria-Hungary. That's just about everybody. Everybody voted for Hitler because he was going to solve all their economic problems. Did Hitler get elected on Monday and start throwing people into ovens on Friday? No. It was a gradual process. The first thing that Hitler did was start to write newspaper articles. Everything that was going wrong was the Jews' fault. They're the ones that caused all these problems. Did the Jews write their own newspaper articles and go, I disagree? Well, not that I can think of. I've never read any newspaper articles that, you know, contradicted any of that. So then the Jews had to wear the Star of David so we can tell who you are. Did they say, no, that's a violation of my privacy. I don't have to tell you whether, you know, I'm Jewish or not. No. The Jews decided, well, it's a religious symbol. We love God. We should be proud to wear the Star of David. Eventually, the Germans came in, and they broke all of the windows in all of the Jewish businesses in one weekend. Saturday night was known as Kristallnacht, which is German for night of glass. You couldn't walk up and down the sidewalks because they were filled with glass. Did the Jews rise up and say, now, damn it, you're violating my property. You shouldn't do that. No. Gosh, we don't want to make the Germans any madder than they already are. We want to just kind of go along to get along. Don't piss them off. They've got guns. Eventually, the Germans are loading them up in the cattle trailers on the train. Where do you think you're going? On vacation? Where do you think they're going to take you? Well, now you're cold and naked, and they're walking you into the ovens where you're going to go to You should have complained at the beginning when you at least had a chance. My question to you, and I don't expect you to answer it, just think about it in your head. How bad do things have to get before you do something? Do they have to take away all your property? Do they have to license every activity that you want to engage in? Do they have to be throwing you on cattle cars before you start to say, now, wait a minute, I don't think this is a good idea? How long is it going to be before you finally resist and say, no, I will not comply, period? That's a different answer for each person. Ask yourself now, because sooner or later you're going to come to that line. And when they cross it, what are you going to say? Well, okay, cross this line. Okay, now cross that line. Okay, now cross this line. And pretty soon, you're in a corner. Sooner or later, you've got to draw a line and stand your ground, whether anybody else does or not. That is what liberty is all about. If you think I am radical, let me share with you some thoughts from some of the founding fathers. Thomas Jefferson said, and this country, with its institutions, belong to the people who, Thomas Jefferson, and what country can preserve its liberties if its rulers are not warned from time to time that this people preserve the spirit of resistance? Let them take arms. The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. Right? We're talking bloodshed if necessary. Abraham Lincoln. This country, with its institutions, belongs to the people who inhabit it. Whenever they shall grow weary of their existing government, they can exercise their constitutional right of amending it or their constitutional right to dismember or overthrow it. He also said, we the people are the rightful masters of Congress and the courts, not to overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow the men who pervert the Constitution. How do you know if the Constitution has been perverted if you haven't read it?
All right. I hope you guys can hear that audio pretty good. If not, just turn up your volume a little bit, you know. Just put the speakers on the car if you're driving, to those that are listening. There it is. There it is. There she goes. What happened there? I don't know what happened there to the episode. Are we still on the air here? I think we are. There we are. Yeah, we're still on air. Okay. My chat room got disconnected again. What's going on with this? The chat room just keeps on shutting down on me. What's up with that? All right, that's Blog Talk Radio at its best. All right, so phone number 657-383-0616. Hopefully that audio you could hear fine, or you heard most of it, what I tried to play. I know this one here you'll be able to hear. Yes, hello, Walter. I don't know what you're chugging there, or changing, whatever. But let's see here. We'll do this one right here. We'll play a little bit of George Washington here. It's keeping the mood here. How about that?
John.
Sure you wrote it big enough?
Mm-hmm, yes, old King George should be able to see that.
Mm-hmm. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, a decent respect requires that they declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to establish new government. We therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, do and with the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved of all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved. In the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
All right, Joseph Gibson here, podcasting in Greensboro, North Carolina, live, understanding the times in which we live today. Hopefully, everybody's doing all right out there. It's good slaves. Check the phone boards here real quick, see who we got here. Hopefully, some substance here. Private caller. All right, I'm going to go ahead and try it here. Go ahead, private caller. What's on your mind?
Boy, Joe, you need me to help you out here with one little thing that guy said in that clip was just totally out of all historical reference whatsoever.
What's going on?
I mean, it was so wrong. I mean, I just feel compelled to say, look, man, when he said, thanks for taking my call, by the way. So,
yeah, man.
You know.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but look, man, he said that Hitler got 98% of the vote to come to power. And then he mentioned Austria-Hungary, which wasn't even part of Germany then, because it didn't become part of Germany until the Anschluss in 1936. And the point of the matter is that Hitler, the way Hitler came to power, he did come to power legally, but he didn't come to power through the election. When he ran against Paul von Hindenburg in the first federal election, I think it was 1932, he got a third of the vote. Paul Hindenburg didn't get a majority, and I think the communists they were running, the guy named Thalberg, he took away a lot of the vote from both of the other two candidates. So they had to have a second round of elections, which Hindenburg won by a narrow majority, but they still didn't have a governing coalition in the Reichstag. So what Hindenburg did was to dismiss the previous chancellor and name Franz von Papen, who was a member of the Center Party that got a fair amount of the vote. But his cabinet, Franz von Papen's cabinet, had no support in the Reichstag. So he knew this, and he had the president who had the power to dissolve the Reichstag before they could dismiss him as being chancellor and then call for new elections. And that's what Hindenburg did. Hindenburg called for new elections for the Reichstag. And the Nazi Party never did get a majority, but they did get 37% of the vote, which was the largest plurality, followed by the Social Democrats, which got 21%, and the Commies got 14%. So Franz von Papen called for a coalition government of these various coalitions, at which that time they appointed Hitler as chancellor because he had the majority of the vote. And that's how he came to come to power. His Reich's chancellor. I mean, Austria-Hungary wasn't even part of the German nation.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Now that I think about it, you're right. That guy
he
is a little
bit
off.
He just made all that up.
Yeah. Well, he's teaching a classroom, so he's probably one of those college professors that obviously just wants to make up history as he goes along. You know, you see, you never know what the heck he can believe. I preferred the stuff he said basically at the end about compliance and everything and getting on the cattle cart, you know. I mean,
okay,
that right there, you got to
the 98% of that was the plebiscite they held in Austria after to make the Anschluss a reality, because the German people voted to unite. I mean, the Austrian people overwhelmingly voted to unite with Germany. And it wasn't much fraud in there. The Austrian people did want to unite with Germany. They had the Anschluss. That's when they became part of the Third Reich.
Okay, hang on. Let's go a little deeper in history here. Let's talk about the American Indian here, or the indigenous people, however they want to pronounce it nowadays. What was the first? Now, we know that the Mayflower, it was not the first. Was it the first ship to land here on the shores of America? What was it, 1620, right?
Oh, no, but not by any means. They already had a thriving colony in Virginia.
Okay.
English did. And there were Spanish colonies in Florida and elsewhere along the eastern seaboard.
So, but the first baby that was born on the ship, they claim, is, was it Hopkins or something? It was a little baby, Oceana Hopkins, was that the name of it? The first baby, it died, actually, like a couple years later. And then there was a boy that was born. But most of the passengers died. But what I'm trying to say is that the first battle that started with the Indians, it started, the first war was in South Dakota, was it, or North Dakota? And then the first skirmishes started in the Northeast, right?
Yeah, well, you're talking about, well, there were wars with Indian tribes like the Algonquin and the Iroquois and the Huron, but that was on the eastern coast. The war you're talking about with the Dakotas, that didn't start until the westward expansion. And, settlers moving west came into contact with the Plains Indian tribes.
Well,
so
exactly.
The war you're talking about
with
the Pilgrims and all that was with the eastern tribes that many people would call even the Seminole in the south. And then you had the Iroquois and the Huron.
Yeah, it started
in
Virginia, right? North Carolina, right? It started in Virginia and North Carolina,
right?
Yeah, okay.
Right.
So
that's
so,
when you had those
Indians
wars.
Attacked,
but, you know, the Plains
Indians
came
attacked
along
them.
A bit later. Hell, they were warring with each other.
I'm trying to get at here.
The Lakota almost wiped out the Cherokee and pushed them off their land.
Well, hang on, though. But what I'm trying to get at here is who started the first – how did this conflict start? Because there's a lot of misinformation out there. The Pilgrims came and they just overran the Indians and they just took their land from them. You know, the idiots, how they talk, you know. I want to know how the first conflict started. What did it start – is there any type of historical record out there that can prove this, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the history is pretty well established. I mean, you got to remember there was some suspicion naturally between the colonists and the Indians that they encountered. I think it was the Algonquin, I think, but they didn't start warring with each other. In fact, they eventually started trading with each other when the Pilgrims got on their feet and stopped trying to be a bunch of little communists, and they started to allow.
Yeah.
You know, the settlers to keep their excess beyond what they needed for subsistence to trade with not only other settlers but with the Indians. So they started trading with each other. They started warring with each other. I don't know whoever started that stuff. That never happened that way.
Yeah. Well, that's what my whole point of it is. Everyone makes it a history class out there. They're teaching the kids in the history that the Indians, you know, the white man just took everything from them and just overran them. And like it's like the Indians were these innocent, poor little victims, you know, that just got overrun. Now, listen, if you're a minority or there's only a few of you that are on the continent as it is, the Indians populated the whole damn continent. Matt, you know, it'd be suicide to attack when you're outnumbered, you know? I mean, it just doesn't make common sense.
Well, you got to remember that, you know, I think the first real bloodshed of any note started with, I think they were the Powhatan Indians. They massacred a whole bunch of colonists in, I think, 1622. And
I don't know what year it was.
English,
you're wrong, Sergeant. It was 1609 1609 it started, the first war. And that was with the Pilgrims.
I'm talking about the Pilgrims.
You're talking about the Pilgrims, not the English. Oh, all right. I got you. You got, see, that's the whole thing. It's all confusing because they teach this misconception that the Pilgrims were the first one and Columbus discovered this, and, you know, and you get it all mixed up, and that's where arguments begin and people. But the bottom line is this. Look, people back then explored new lands and new places. They didn't, you know, the earth was unexplored. People got conquered, man. You conquered this, people conquered this, and that's the way it was. You know, now what about, now, to say, go ahead.
You know what the hardest thing it is to get across to these modern sensibilities who've been educated by woke professors and all this other nonsense that's foolishness they get taught? And we try to explain to them every country's borders, every single one, without exception, has been determined by war and conquest. Period.
Yeah.
It is the story of mankind and nations. All of them, without exception. And you try to get across to these dummies, and they go on some stupid narrative.
Yeah.
There's not. I mean, do you think Genghis Khan and the Mongol Empire achieved that by being peaceful and nice? Honest to God, it was the largest contiguous land empire the world has ever seen. And they did it ruthlessly with Mongol cavalrymen overrunning much of southern and central Europe. Every country has been determined for war and conquest and counterattack and counterfighting.
Right now, we're being conquered.
Without exception. Without exception.
We're being conquered by the liberals.
Here's why they do it, Joe. This is the reason they do it the way they do it. And talk about, well, the Western conquest was particularly gruesome and worse than any of the others because they want to invalidate the founding of all these nations that they want to destroy. That's why they do it.
That's true.
It doesn't have anything to do with the actual historical fact.
Yeah, but Sarge, I want to switch gears. I got another caller waiting. I see hopefully substance. Real quick, not to dwell on it. Did you catch last night's podcast by any chance? With the NSM?
Where?
Over on the NSM platform.
I caught part of it, but I was busy working on soldering
all
up
right,
some
right.
connections.
So
I missed it.
You didn't catch the ending. The ending, pretty
no.
much, the last half hour, last 45 minutes. All right. Well,
no,
I was just wondering, because that was just, okay, all right, well, some things were ironed out there or whatever. You know, there was some disagreements going on, but we ironed everything out. Just want to know who listened in live. That's the only reason why I'm asking. So, obviously, you didn't hear it. So, that's good, because it's going to be edited out anyway. So, that's good. Let me go to the next caller here. Hopefully, it's some substance here. Go ahead, private caller.
Hello.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, hello. What can I do for you?
My son? I wanted to talk about the Peloton Indians.
Go ahead.
You know, I am very familiar with them. They would make you do exercise on bikes, and you used to have to follow the leader.
Then, huh? Wow.
Yes. But in Canada, we would call them buffaloes.
Okay, good job. All right, you take your breath there, take a breath, and, you know, sit back for a little bit there. He's a winner, let me tell you. You know, where do they come from? Sorry, you still there?
Well, he's expressing himself, shall we say.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Free expression.
Yeah,
that was what you call free association expression.
Yeah. So what you got for me, Sarge? What's going on? What are these liberals up to? I've been kind of media blocked out here for the past few days. I've been so busy. I haven't even paid attention to the mainstream media, let alone the alternative media. What's going on out there? Are they taking away our guns yet, or what? Are they voting?
That's always a work in progress. There's never a day when they don't think about that. But you're talking about new. Outrages. You have to talk about what they're doing in Maricopa County. This judge just quashed the audit because they were getting dangerously close to showing how fraudulent the whole thing was.
No way.
Lord. I forget what this, but it's not over yet. Don't think for a moment that it's over yet, because it isn't. Because I think they found another way to go around this with another appeal to get it reinstated and get it going. Because they've already found innumerable irregularities in the way the vote count was tallied. I mean, they've already found a bunch of irregularities that deserve further scrutiny.
Yeah. I know.
So, I mean, that's one of the worst I've heard is this judge just coming along to quash the audit.
Yeah. Well, but in the end, though, what's the purpose for it? I mean, what? We know there was corruption. What's the purpose of proving it when we already know the proof is there? I mean, what's...
Well, it has to
be
proven. I mean, you have to prove it in court. Something like this has to be proven in court because the results have been certified.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you have to prove it beyond... to the preponderance of the evidence because it's a civil matter. And you got to have both sides present their cases and then see what... Which side prevails, whether or not this thing occurred. Now, look, I think it needs to be proven in court just for the historical record, if nothing else. I mean,
yeah.
I know there's no constitutional way to undo the election once the election has been certified, other than the way I said that they'll never do, and that is Kamala Harris resigns, President Trump accepts a nomination as vice president from Joe Biden, and then Joe Biden resigns. That's the only constitutional way to do it. And, of course, that would require a sense of honor to do, so you'll know it'll never be done because Democrats are about power, 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 and they hate Donald Trump like a psychosis. So that's the only constitutional way to undo it.
Yeah, that's right.
But
I think
still
the
needs
only
to
way
be shown,
if no other reason,
just to galvanize us to make sure we get rid of these bastards.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of him running for Senate or whatever. And as somebody was throwing that out there in the midterms, there running for office in the midterms, I think he should just run for president again. It's only 2.5 more years, and he'd be able to start campaigning, right? I mean, when you think about it, really 2.5, you know.
But look what they did in Maricopa County. They already showed that the Arizona election auditors recovered the deleted database of the voting. And the ballot chain of custody is still missing. They can't account for the ballot chain of custody. That's just two of the things that they've already uncovered with this. And as far as I'm concerned, they've already proven election fraud in court, but with everything quashed, they can't bring it to a conclusion.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You know, it's I'm just looking at some stuff, list pendants and stuff like that of IRS stuff, because I played a thing about the IRS and earlier about the IRS is everything but unconstitutional about it, and I had Aaron Russo there in a audio there I was playing. So if the IRS is unconstitutional there's no law that says you have to file a tax return, how can they get away with prosecuting people? How is this happening? How can they do it for tax evasion and stuff like that?
I guess on the basis of the fact that there's a 16th Amendment, the 16th Amendment clearly says that tax may be levied on any source of income whatsoever. Now, I am not really clear as to whether or not the IRS was created in a constitutional manner, because even if you do have a regulatory agency to collect income taxes from income, you still got to have that agency declared or constituted in a constitutional manner.
Is that an indirect tax or a direct tax?
The 16th Amendment is pretty clear. It says you can levy taxes on income.
Okay. Well, hang on. That's not what was said in this audio here now. That's not what was said in this audio now. Well, over there about the IRS. Now, there was direct tax is unconstitutional.
You've read the 16th Amendment, haven't you?
I can't quote it for you word for word, but it has to do with the tax.
I got it right.
Yes, it has to do with the tax.
I got
go ahead,
read
it to
me. Here's what it says. It says the Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived without apportionment among the several states and without regard to any census or enumeration. See, the problem with collecting taxes on income prior to the 16th Amendment was it had to be done on the basis of apportionment, and it was very difficult to do because you had to do regular censuses to determine how many people lived in the state. So nobody even bothered to try. The 16th Amendment gave them the authority to do it without apportionment or census. That's what's so insidious about it.
Is it constitutional or well? Listen, I'm gonna let me play. You must have missed
it
then.
Clearly, it's the Constitution. It's part of the Constitution now.
Okay.
So
okay. Well, listen to what this guy has to say.
What they're talking about is the IRS itself. Was it promulgated constitutionally, and has it passed the requisite statutes to enable to order you to file an income tax return every year?
Well, I don't. That's not what Aaron Russo basically said or went over. I mean, it's only about 5 minutes long.
Because the only thing the Constitutional Amendment does is provide the common law basis for statutes. That's all.
If you don't have a
statute in place, then you can't enforce it.
All right, I'll tell you what. It's a good talking point. Since you missed it, I'll redo it again. It's only 3.5-4 minutes long, so I won't play the whole thing at the end.
Okay, let's hear it, because I like to hear what they got to say.
Let's hear what they got to say, and then we'll use talking points off of it.
The Constitution is pretty clear, man. It's clear as a bell, 16th Amendment,
okay.
What it says.
All right, here we go.
Can we go into the IRS?
Yeah, sure, that's huge. Well, the IRS is just part of the Federal Reserve System problem. And in actuality, there is no law. I've researched this very thoroughly, because I kept hearing for years there's no law that you have to pay, and I sort of poo-pooed it.
Yeah, I did too.
And they make you think anybody that says that's a wacko and a kook, you know. But there is no law. Let me just tell you straight out. There is no law that requires you to file a 1040. I researched this, and I'll tell you why there's no law. First of all, the Constitution says, okay, that there's two kinds of taxation, direct taxes and indirect taxes. A direct tax must be apportioned and done by census, which means that a direct tax, which is what a tax on your labor would be, if you're a direct tax, you can't get away from it, right? A direct tax on your labor would have to be apportioned, means divided amongst all the people equally, right?
Mm-hmm.
And an indirect tax is like an excise tax. It's like a tax that you don't have to pay if you don't use the service.
Luxury car or something.
Well, not even a luxury car, can't wait, but like gasoline.
Yeah.
If you don't want to drive a car, if you want to take a bicycle, you don't buy gas, you don't pay the tax.
No.
So that's called an indirect tax. But that indirect tax has to be the same in every state.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be uniform, okay? So there's two kinds of taxes. Direct and indirect in the Constitution. In 1894, they tried to pass an income tax on your labor. The Supreme Court said you can't do that. It's unconstitutional, and they stopped. In 1913, to get around that Pollock decision of 1894, they passed the 16th Amendment, which said we can tax any income from any place forever. Okay? And once they passed that tax, then people started paying an income tax on the labor. It became a third form of taxation.
Mm-hmm.
You had direct apportioned tax, you had the indirect tax, and now you had a direct tax that was unapportioned.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So you had three forms of taxation now. But, two things. The amendment was never ratified properly. It was a fraud. Okay? And that's been proven. But the second point is this. Even if it wasn't a fraud, and had been ratified properly, even if it had been, okay, the Supreme Court in 8 different decisions that I have researched said the 16th Amendment gave the government no new power of taxation. They can't tax the labor of the American people, so it was finished. And in 1917, they stopped taxing, so they did it for 3 years, right? And so there is no tax on the labor of the American people, no legal tax. And no constitutional tax.
All right, what do you think about that, Sarge? What do you think about that?
Okay, well, you notice that he kind of skirted around the fact by saying the 16th Amendment was unconstitutionally ratified. Well, I think there's even a bigger case that the 14th Amendment was unconstitutionally ratified, and we're stuck with it, aren't we? We're stuck with the 16th Amendment as a matter of practicality. Now, I think there might be a stronger case to say that the statute law is not properly written and applied with regard to the amendment. But I just don't think it's going to get any work by trying to ignore something that's in the Constitution, whether it was ratified properly or not. I don't think the argument is going to go very far. It didn't work with the 14th Amendment.
I got to agree with you on that.
I hate the 16th Amendment more than any other part of the Constitution, okay? I hate it. And that's the only part of the Constitution I truly hate. I mean, I hate it, but it's there. I'm not going to try to pretend it ain't there because I hate it so much.
Yeah, Yeah, true.
I mean,
right,
it's in there. They put the dog on set. I mean, it's clear as a bell what it says. Let's assume it was ratified properly, okay?
Go ahead.
From whatever source derived, without apportionment, among the several states, and without regard to any census or enumeration. That's like almost like the Second Amendment.
No, because it has to be ratified. It has to be. If it's not ratified properly.
Good luck with that.
Well, you could do it through historical records. I mean, historical documentation is a congressional record. I mean, I don't know. Like you said, it's there. You're absolutely correct. It's there, and what can we do about it, you know?
We need to look at all the laws they passed and see if those laws, just because something's in the Constitution, doesn't mean that every law that's passed and ostensibly in furtherance of that amendment is constitutional. It may be the laws worded in such a way or was passed in such a way as to be unconstitutional.
Well, and I think right. That's Bob, go ahead, private caller. Hang on. Let me take this private caller, Sarge. Hang on. Go ahead, private caller. Hopefully you're not the same one. Go ahead.
Good evening. This is Dr.
All right,
Peter.
It's the same one. It's the same jerk. Go ahead, next private caller. Go ahead. Slow tonight.
Yes, Joe. John Doe. May I be heard?
Yes, you can be heard. Okay, I recognize that voice. The other guy up there in the front, he wanted to play jokes, but not Sarge, the other guy before you. Go ahead, John Doe. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, see, here's the thing I get back to every time. The Constitution has a lot of words in it, but the Declaration of Independence sets the spirit promise of the founding of this country. And if the interpretation of what went into the United States Constitution does not adhere with the spirit, hope, and the promise of the Declaration of Independence, then the heart is ripped out of America's founding. That's why I keep saying since 1795 or 1798, we have had nothing but the rule of man deceitfully masquerading under the color of law. It's all illegitimate.
Yeah, well, tell that to the nose of the gun. Tell that to the guy that shows up with the uniform to your door. And a lot of people bring up a point, even if we were to restore the original Constitution and the Republic, we'll end up in the same darn position and slot again 50, 60 years later when our generation dies out. You know, so therefore, it's just insanity, you know, repeating ourselves. So what do we do?
But check this out. Here's the thing. I keep trying to explain this, and some people's brains just can't get wrapped around it. And I couldn't either for a long time. But I've listened to a number of lawyers, and Herb Titus was the one that helped me really get this down. And when you talk about legal principles and theory, that principle of mutuality comes across through the Declaration of Independence. That's why in the very first paragraph it says, that you assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. That let you and I and everybody know that we're going to be party to that Declaration of Independence, that we were self-governing free people, and each one of us exclusively owned our jurisdictional power and authority of all burdens and encumbrances, including those in governing. Otherwise, somebody was not being treated as an equal. One was being lord, and the other was being slave. So,
so who provides the services then? Okay, John Doe.
What,
okay,
what?
I got that. What you say? I got what you say. But who provides the services then in America? Then, what? We have no representatives anymore. We don't have anybody doing foreign policy. We don't have anybody talking. You know, making deals, exchanges, importing, exporting. I mean, who's in charge of this then? If everybody's self-governing, who's gonna take the authoritative role?
No, Joe. When I say self-governing, you for some reason go to some place foreign to me. I know you're talking about a more direct self-governing standpoint, like there's no law, it's just anarchy, and you have to decide for yourself your own actions. I'm talking about governing. You making decisions on your self-actions on how you act is not governing. Governing has to do with how we relate with each other, how we interact with each other, how we treat each other, and how we transact with each other. That's why whenever they pass laws, in order for us to be self-governing free people, when they pass a law, there's supposed to be due process. Your right to good faith bargaining, good faith negotiating, mutuality of agreement, freedom of contract, freedom of association, freedom of conscience. So therefore, because of the fact that we were having a representative form of governing, in, you know, as a constitutional representative, congressmen and senators during the 13 colonies knew that there was no way for them to keep in touch with the colony citizens without going by horseback or sending some kind of Pony Express mail and whatnot. And so the time lag would be ridiculous. So that what they do? Instead of committing extrinsic fraud and denying you your due process rights of good faith bargaining and whatnot, they gave us the right of redress in the First Amendment. So therefore, if they passed a bill or a law that infringed on your pursuit of happiness and it was giving them a high-speed fast lane to their pursuit of happiness and making you jump through all kinds of hoops and hurdles and fees and whatnot, and, you know, basically limiting, infringing, and abridging your pursuit of happiness, then you got a right of redress. But we never got all off right. of the ground with that, because in 1795 on forward, nobody ever would honor the redress of grievance, and they were taking advantage of the ignorance.
Okay, so
look,
it's gone. It's over with. Now what do we do now?
Let me finish something here. When you look at the Declaration of Independence and that spirit, hope, and promise, you know, is the heart of what makes us roll. Well, in the Article 1, Sections 9 and 10 of the United States Constitution, it says no title of nobility at the federal level or the state level would be granted. So therefore, there's no rank and file. There's no chain of command as to who's lord and who's slave. We're all equitable, self-governing, free people. You own the exclusive jurisdictional authority and power over your burdens and encumbrances, including governing. That's the First Amendment.
I agree with you on all that. That's fine. Okay. But, again, you say you get lost when I mention this. Okay, so the Federal Reserve then has to go away. They're gone. Okay, what do we use as a bartering system? There's no authority. There's no representative government out there. How are you going to – tell me, how is Chicago going to govern itself? Tell me how that would work out.
Joe, when the congressmen and senators go into office, they have a fiduciary agency relationship with you and I. They get to be the trustee of our personal private property. That personal private property is the governing of you. My personal private property is the governing of me. If they use that fraudulently by extrinsic fraud or denying you your due process or your redress of grievance, they've destroyed the legal effect of your private property. Destruction of private property is a felony, and they should be in prison. That's the rule of law, my friend.
But we don't have prisons anymore. There's no governing authority on that aspect of it. I mean, how many societies, what kind of society are you trying to have here? Because you're going to have immoral people. You're going to have a criminal element out there. You always will. You're always going to have people like Sarge. You're going to have people like me. We're going to have people like you. You're going to have all these different groups of people. How is that going to play out with what you're talking about? How are you going to apply that principle of government to today's society? Impossible.
It's not impossible. The more you and I and Sarge and everybody communicates, what I'm trying to communicate to you right now is that every legitimately legal United States citizen who is party to the Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitutional, you own your exclusive power and authority of all burdens and encumbrances of you. If you argue that before the court of law, they cannot change that. The only reason why they're getting away with it is because of ignorant people, and they're taking advantage of the masses of the ignorance. And if you don't know how to argue that from the standpoint that I'm telling you, then you also are contributing to the problem.
Okay, so why do I have to go argue it? Nobody's bothering me right now. What are they doing?
They're doing it to all of us.
Who's doing what to me right now?
Well, Joe, look, I understand what this gentleman is saying. Philosophically, I'm in complete accordance with him. However, we got to deal with practical realities here. As a philosophical matter, I understand what he's saying. I understand it completely. I even accept the line of reasoning before a court of law. Here's the thing about the amendatory process, though, which made this 16th Amendment. In order to get an amendment, there's two ways. You got to have an Article 5 convention to propose an amendment or even completely overhauling the Constitution, which has never been done before in the history of the United States, or it's got to be done, by the way, the 27 subsequent amendments to the Constitution were done. And that includes the Bill of Rights. There's 27 of them, including the Bill of Rights. What did they do? They went and made a proposal to both houses of Congress, which had to pass by a two-thirds majority in both houses. Then they sent it to the states for each state legislature to ratify it, and three-fourths of the states in the United States at the time the amendment is proposed have to ratify it, three-fourths or more of them, to ensure there is a consensus amongst the people. That's the way every amendment has been passed, save the 14th Amendment, which was not done constitutionally, okay? All the others, though, would appear, were passed that way. Now, given that reality of the three-fourths of the states, remember, there were 48 states in the United States in 1913. There were 48 of them. I'm pretty sure, close to it anyway. I might have been one or two came around in 19, but not many. I think it was 48, I'm pretty sure. But there was a overwhelming consensus that this country needed this dastardly 16th Amendment. And that went out, we stuck with it. So now we got to go about looking, okay, what do they do with regard to statutory law and what? Remember, the ERA, they've been trying to pass the ERA since, what, the 1970s. They can't get a three-fourths majority to ratify it. They're still failing. They've been trying since the 1970s to pass. No luck.
Hey there, Sarge. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got
you
disconnected on me for a second. Go ahead. Go ahead, Sarge. Oh,
okay. I'll
let you and John Doe. I got another caller here. Let me see who this caller is real quick, and I'm gonna let you and John Doe think about that. I want you to debate Sarge on that real quick. Let me see who this caller is. Go ahead, caller. Private caller. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello. This is Gary. I'm the general manager at Gold's Gym. You were caught having gay sex,
Gary,
with a male trainee.
All right. Okay. Whatever. Goodbye. Okay. Yep, all right. Jeez, unbelievable. Why do I gotta entertain stupid idiots like that? You know. John Doe, go ahead. Go after him right here. Cause
that might say more about him than you, man. But anyway, look. but look. Again, they've been trying to pass the ERA since the 1970s. They cannot get the requisite number of state legislatures to ratify it. They've even run out of the time limit required to pass an amendment, and then they bring it up again. And still can't get three-fourths of the state to ratify the damn thing. But with the 16th Amendment, that just didn't seem to be the case. They got to ratify it pretty quickly. I think within a year or two.
Sarge, can I interact with you?
Yeah, go ahead.
I appreciate the level of intellect you bring to the discussion, and I love the challenges because that's what helps sharpen iron and make us all grow. Here's the thing. If you start out with the basis that it's okay to commit fraud in order to push forward another amendment or any other aspect of governing, you've nullified the whole Constitution and you've ripped the heart of the Declaration of Independence that the founding of our country is set forth on, and it's all a smoke and mirrors game from then on out. So when these people are passing the rule amid the laws and they have a fiduciary agency trust relationship with you to do your business and do you no harm because you are temporarily allowing them to administrate and manage your property, the governing of you, which you have exclusive, you know, power and authority to determine all your burdens and encumbrances, and then if they do not honor you, your right of redress, and they deprive you of your due process rights of good faith bargaining, good faith negotiations, mutuality of agreement and all that, then they've nullified the Constitution already anyway. You're not working under the rule of law. It's a scam, mind scam, and everybody keeps, well, because they did this and that and all these amendments are in place and they continue to do it, well, then, you know, practical, we can't get through it. No, the practical is you're not trying to go to the true principle and depth of the tenets of what the rule of law makes it, gives it substantiality anyway.
Well, I'll tell you what, John Doe, I'll let you guys get 5 minutes apiece there. I'm going to head over to the NSM's open phones here tonight. They got open phones tonight, so I'm going to head over there. I have to chime in to the Republic also. I got to check in with them. So it's a busy night for me for podcasting. But I'm going to go over to the NSM. It's open phones over there. I think John Doe, that would be a perfect platform for you there on there. Thursday night, I'm on there, of course, at 9 p.m. also. I'll tell you what, Sarge, go ahead, man. Why don't you talk to the Constitution?
Well,
it's so very important. If we're not going to obey the Constitution or the rule of law, what do we have, Sarge?
I mean, I'm philosophically aligned with Mr. Doe. I agree with him completely about, you know, the fact that redress of grievances is critical to our constitutional contract with the government of the United States. But when you have a form of redress,
that
you bring
is pretty loaded,
Sarge.
That
agencies.
Butt is pretty loaded.
Yeah.
That butt is pretty loaded.
I know it is, but here's where it gets to be loaded. You have an opportunity for redress of grievances by importuning your so-called representatives and bringing suits in court. Innumerable people have brought lawsuits in court on the very same grounds that Mr. Doe has brought forward, and they have availed them not. A very famous recent case was the famous, relatively famous actor, Wesley Snipes, who made the same arguments Mr. Doe is to a great extent. He went to jail.
Have you read the proclamation of intent that was posted on the Republic of the United States.org website, the interim government? Have you read those documents? You love history, Sarge. It goes all over the Jay Treaty, everything, and it reclaims the republic du jour. But we need 5,000 people in each state to do this, and we can't get it. We don't have the numbers. You got to go constitutionally reinstate the republic. Yeah, man. You want me to put it in the chat room?
Reinstate republic?
Oh, Republic of the United States.org. Hang on, I got it right here, as a matter of fact. Hang on.
Hey, guys.
I don't want you to go to the wrong place. Hang on a second, John Doe. It's Republic of the United States .org. Yeah, Republic of the United States .org. Yeah, right there. Yep.
I will take
and
a look
you
at
go it. There. Yeah, you go there and you look at the where it says you want to go to interim records, that's right there on the top, and declaration of intent, a proclamation of claim and interest of the Republic of the United States. They served the United Nations, served the Hague through the United States Postal Union and a bunch of other places I can't off the top of my head. And they read the entire document, all constitutional. Everything's constitutional. Nothing illegal about it. Everything is legit. And tell me what you think next show. I mean, or you know, whatever. You can call me anytime. I mean, this is where we were at in 2010, and still here we are 11 years later, and we have the republic re-inhabited. It's been in court too. It's been in the courts. We have lawful claim here to re-inhabit the republic. And you talk about the 14th Amendment, and that's what they address here. But we don't have the people. We don't have 5,000 people in every state.
Joe,
it's in, you know.
Joe, you know when I really got disillusioned though with this whole notion of redress of grievances, what really set me on the path of my what is beginning to become near total disillusionment. It began when they allowed Obama to take the oath of office as president. And
yep.
Article 2,
yep.
Section 1, Clause 5 requires that the president be a natural born citizen. Now it's a very simple definition. And no matter what you think about someone being a natural-born citizen with regard to Article 2, when a person is born quite literally, legally, a citizen of three different countries that we know of, according to his life story, if you believe it, I don't even know if I believe it or not, but if you believe his life story, he was a citizen of Kenya, a citizen of the United Kingdom, and a citizen of the United States, if you believe he was born in Hawaii. Now, there is no way on God's green earth that the framers of the Constitution intended a person born with three nationalities at birth, legal allegiances, to be president of the United States. But
and that's why
we
presented this to
you. I was told over and over again by all the people who brought these carefully reasoned legal cases before, tried to get it before the courts, not one of which was heard on the merits. They were all told we were insane to even broach the matter. Now we got Kamala Harris sitting in there, and she ain't eligible. She was born under the same circumstances as Wong Kim Ark, and the court held that he was a citizen. They didn't say he was a natural born citizen. They said he was a citizen, and the only reason he was a citizen was because he was born of two parents who are lawfully resident within the United States. Notice what they said, lawfully resident. And only by the fact that the 14th Amendment existed was he even a citizen.
Exactly.
So I'm just
that got me
to be so disillusioned when I said, here we got a clear case of someone who ain't even eligible to be president of the United States, and we're told we're insane for even daring to bring it up to the courts, and they won't even hear it on the merits. Not one case got heard on the merits. Out of the hundreds of lawsuits that were presented throughout federal courts of the land, not one of them was heard on the merits of the case. They were all dismissed for lack of standing or lack of some nonsense.
To answer that, Sarge,
I got disillusioned after seeing this. Really?
I know, but Sarge, this is why this document was presented to the United States of America Joint Chiefs of Staff, the International Court of Justice, the Universal Postal Union, and the United Nations. And it was all accepted, okay? And it was all, and it's on record. It's on record. It gives you the numbers and everything, your ID numbers, the secured ID number right there on the document, okay? And this was filed. Proclamation of Claim and Interest. I'll just read a couple lines to you. This way you know what you're looking at. It says, from and by limited, delegated by we the people on the Republic of the United States of America, to the United States of America, Department of Defense, Joint Chiefs of Staff, so on and so forth. Let's skip down here. It says, we the people hold the founders of the United States Municipal Corporation deceived us involuntarily servitude as a corporate subjects without us knowingly and willingly giving consent according to law. Consent of we the people is required before elected officials of the United States Municipal Corporation may act. And it goes on and on. And it gives all this constitutional, it goes what John Doe's talking about. It goes by what you're talking about, Sarge. Read the darn document, all of it, and then come back and talk to me and say, wow, Joe, and we need five to lawfully do this, lawfully, peacefully, too, now, peacefully, without going into a darn civil war. This can be done lawfully because the United States Corporation is bankrupt. It's over. It's broke. You're operating and you can't pay the interest off on what they owe. So, therefore, it's going to have to be absorbed. Absorbed into what? The United Nations. Well, what happens to us then? We have to break away from their jurisdiction, and we have to, again, have an interim government set up for the world to recognize us on international standing. You have to have international standing. The world has got to recognize us. And we can't do it because we can't get the people away from their flat-screen TVs or football games or baseball games on a Sunday. You know, well, we can't do it. You know, I mean, we came close, but go read the document, and you'll see what I'm talking about. You know, and John Doe, you will agree with me, too. You'll be like, oh, wow, I didn't know that was there, you know. I'm telling you right now.
I got the book. I got the page. I bookmarked the page. I'm going to read it tonight. I'm going to take a look and see what they got to say because I got it.
All right.
I'm looking at it right now.
John Doe, you got something to say, man?
Yeah, see, the problem I keep having with listening to these different comments is that if you try to deduct what actually is left is government-sanctioned theft and assault. And whenever we hand over temporarily our personal property, the governing of us, to our elected officials who are supposed to only administrate and manage our property. They are not the lawmakers. They are the ones who write the law based on our dictates because we, the people, are the ultimate power and authority over all as a joint heir in unity, unity of title, unity of interest, unity of property under the Declaration of Independence and carried through the United States Constitution. If you lose the spirit, hope, and promise of the Declaration of Independence, you rip the heart out of the founding of the United States Constitution. So any perverted interpretation in the United States Constitution that does not align with the Declaration of Independence, spirit, hope, and promise, then it is illegitimate. It is fraud. So therefore,
now listen to this.
It's basically sanctioning bullying and theft. If your private property, when they go into office and they pass a bill and then deny you your due process rights of being able to do good faith bargaining and all that good stuff, and then they deny you your right of redress and also deny you your right of remonstrance to try to get that redress that way, they've not only committed extensive fraud, they've committed destruction of private property. If they're not willing to give us the same benefits and privileges that they want, then Article 4, Section 2, citizens of each state shall be entitled to same privileges and immunities of citizens in the several states. All of the people that work in our government they are also citizens, so therefore if they think they can use the government as a weapon to beat us into submission to their agenda, and then they don't have to allow our agenda to be mutually and reciprocally represented, enacted, codified, and ratified, and treat us like a third party or second party person, you know, a legislative slave, and represent us like a pimp represents a prostitute, the whole thing is fraud.
Okay, but listen, wouldn't you agree then with what this says right here, okay? We the people hold continued claim, accept, and use the Jay Treaty with full jurisdiction for the United States of America, being paramount parties in interest generally recognized by the Jay Treaty 1794 between the United States of America and Great Britain, Britannia Crown, the Crown and all subsidiaries, agencies, and agents, ETAL, and whereas the following articles of the Jay Treaty are still in effect and define misdeeds, dishonor, and violations committed by the United States Municipal Corporation, agents, employees, actors with England, titles of nobility, in violation and trespass of original Article 13, ratified 1819, which others mislabel as the missing 13th Amendment, did unlawfully set aside the original Article 13th by an act of fraud upon the American people. And, okay, and it goes into exactly what you're saying, but you have to address the corporation. You can't say what you're saying, John, though, and not address this like they did, okay, because you have the corporation. You know what I mean? There'll be conflict. You don't want to get into a gunfight with these people or a war because you'll lose. You don't want a civil war in the country because you'll lose, you know?
So you're saying it's a bully mentality?
No, what I'm saying is you have to address history as that it's already been laid out. We can't just erase what has happened. We have to amend it and go back to the original beginning. And that's where, do you know what the Jay Treaty is? Do you go back before 1790? It quotes what you were talking about, about titles of nobility and whatnot, that we get away from those titles of nobility.
But Joe, any of those statutes and acts or regulations or whatever ordinances or whatever else they've passed since basically 1795, they're illegitimate from the get-go.
This is before
1794,
John. Didn't you hear what I said? Read it? Didn't you listen to what I was reading? 1794, that's when this all began. Okay, and they went
but
on
you
before that.
In
so
the
they
corporation,
addressed...
the corporation did not exist in 1794 in that capacity.
But we have to go back to 1794 to restore our original republic like you want, okay? That's what I'm saying. It addresses what you are talking about. It's just saying it in different words because you're saying it from what you learned, but you have to go back to the original, what it really means and what it says. They committed fraud on the American people. That's what you said. They commit fraud. Well, that's what this is saying, that they have committed an act of fraud. So we have to go back to the original.
Yeah, but you don't even need any amendments after the 10th Amendment because what I just read just a while ago, the Article 4, Section 2, the citizens of each state shall be entitled to same privileges and immunities of citizens in the several states. They couldn't pass anything without the constituents of every other state in an agreement. You cannot have the same privileges and immunities and then deprive them from somebody else, and then you want to say you get to claim them as your benefit and privilege.
No,
you're
I'm not
willing
saying
to extend
that.
Those
you
to
read,
others. You're not
you,
willing. You're,
no, I didn't, John Doe. I'm telling you that they're breaking away from the United. They're disavowing what the corporation has done and what has happened after 1794 also. Everything that you're talking about, it says it. It addressed everything you said. It just said it in a different rightful, lawful terms and meanings. It said it in the right way that the world and the international court would recognize. What the international court won't recognize what you're saying. You have to have standing anywhere you go on earth, anywhere in government or anywhere, or even self-governing. You have to have standing. If you have no standing, then you're just a you know what I mean, a nut job, just spouting off, and then nobody's going to recognize it. That's how people are going to look at you. That's what I'm trying to tell you, is that we have to have a common goal here, and we all have to agree.
Right.
If we're all nitpicking at words, John Doe, saying, no, I'm right, you're right. But look, you want freedom, John Doe? You want freedom, right? You want freedom. Well, this is freedom, right?
I want
here.
More than freedom.
Well, what do you want?
Because it depends on how people define their own freedom. My thing is from the get-go.
Freedom is freedom. All right, well, we'll have this conversation again.
Joe, this conversation
again. It's as simple as you treat others the way you want to be treated and do no harm.
Common law, right?
Well,
I don't know all the common law
to say yes or no. I think you're right I understand about common law, but that don't mean I'm a definitive, comprehensive understanding of common law.
All right, we don't have to beat it down and with a stick and stick it and cut it apart and dissect it to understand what common law means. Common law, let's use common sense.
Do no harm to you, right?
Do no harm.
The crooks in our government, the crooks that keep passing all these bills that use this vague and ambiguous language to get us arguing over definitions, they are going to use it to keep us separated and get 5,000 people in each state.
All right, well, listen, we'll continue this conversation. It was an interesting conversation. I've got to get over to the Republican. I'm going to do open phones here tonight. Thank you, John Doe, though, for joining me. And Sarge, of course, as always, thank you so much. And thank you for participating in the podcast. Always a knowledgeable conversation when I talk to both of you guys. So thank you so much. I appreciate it. God bless the Republic. And let's see here. I guess we'll just wrap it up right now. There's no point in playing anything. I got to get out of here. So good night, everybody. Take care.
Take care.